Welcome back. This is our second half of our MBA Windows Store for iOS Developers all-day session, and we have Eric back on stage with us. And we're going to spend the next hour talking about UI presentation and SAML. And I have to preface this with the fact that teaching SAML, how many days you guys teach SAML on the course?
I think it takes us probably about 2 days.
2 days from the five-day course?
Yeah, probably a day and a half.
Yep.
And so, then XAML still makes its way sprinkled into everything else.
Yep. So I have 1 hour. There's no way I can teach you XAML. My goal for today is actually to just give you a good introduction so you know where to go. And the good news is that we cheated. And last Friday in here in the Microsoft Virtual Academy, we presented an all-day XAML training. I know the videos are not online now. So if you're watching this live, the videos are not available yet. But I know that in probably in the next 3 to 5 days, all those videos, a whole day of SAML, introducing every concept that I'm going to talk about here for about an hour will be available. Here I'm going to spend 5 minutes. Last Friday we probably spent 45 minutes to an hour. So all I can say is I just want to point you there and give you some context. But I do want to give you an overview and kind of map the similarities and differences between SAML and what you get out of Xcode.
At the end of this, you probably won't know or feel super comfortable using XAML, but you'll know enough to know what you need to learn in order to be XAML proficient.
Yep, and so. You'll be impressed. You'll be like, XAML's cool. So just very basic introduction. XAML is nothing but XML. So it's just an XML representation for serializing and initializing objects. Again, I compare it to SIB, where if you open a SIB, you see that all you have is a serialization of what a control or any kind of UI object would look like. It has a hierarchy. XAML is very expressive. I have this little snippet right here. And just for context, in just these few lines of code, I can tell you some of the things that we're expressing. For example, we have the concept of containment, like, hey, who's my, kind of there's a hierarchy here. There's a visual hierarchy here about a page with a grid inside of it, with a button inside of it. So there's a little bit of a visual hierarchy going. We also have styles we're going to touch on. Styles is what we use to customize the look and feel of our user interface. I always kind of try to accrue them to the equivalent of UI appearances. If you're familiar with CSS styles, the cascading style sheets, that's the concept that we have. So you're familiar with that, this will feel right at home.
Right. And coming from iOS, you'll quickly learn to appreciate styles and how much easier they can make your life.
Yep, exactly. And then we have controls. And for example, here we have a button, it's a control. We have an outlet, which is this X name. So we are expressing the exact same things that you're looking at. We use data binding a lot in our SAML world, in the .NET world. This is an optional thing. I'm not telling you that data binding is the only way to go, but I will give you a little bit of an intro and tell you a little bit of what we have. And then, of course, within the SAML, we embed a lot of layout constraints. As you'll learn today, our layouts are a lot more dynamic. So we tend to focus a little bit more on layout than what you traditionally get out of Xcode.
And that's to account for the many different varieties of screen sizes and form factors that you have on Windows devices.
Yep. Yeah, Windows runs on everything.
Exactly.
So you're going to have a challenge there. And then the last thing I do want to mention a little bit is everything that I'm going to show you is toolable. So SAML is very toolable. I'm going to spend a little bit of time in Visual Studio. I'm going to type a lot of it by hand because I wanted you to kind of see it and learn it as we go. But everything can also be done in Blend, which I'm going to open the tool and walk you through dragging and dropping a few elements and creating hierarchies and everything else. So everything that you can do here should be able to be, you should be able to do from within Blend or from within Visual Studio by dragging and dropping objects. And then the last thing is everything you can do in SAML, again, because it's nothing but initialization and serialization of objects, anything you can do in SAML, you will be able to do from code. That said, I definitely tell people that, always tell me from iOS, because iOS people, some of them, they like to just use code and avoid using Xcode or SIBs or storyboards, etc. You will be fighting pretty heavily against the current if you try to do everything in code. You're just, very much like Xcode, where you end up writing a lot of code for things that would probably not be too hard to do with a designer. With XAML, that compounds a little bit more because, again, we have layout bindings and other features that you want to take advantage of.
And I think a big reason for that is ZIBs that while they are kind of human editable and readable in their XML format, it's not really done that often, and you're not really supposed to. Interface Builder is your view into the ZIB, whereas XAML, you can easily go in and edit it by hand if you need to, or rely on the tools in order to generate it for you.
Yep.
But it is very much more human readable and writable too.
Yep. So let's start. I'm going to give you a cool, it's really simple demo just so that I get everything going, because we had a problem in the first session, so we didn't get enough XAML out of the way, and finger crossed now that the problem there is going away. And I'm just going to give you a very basic kind of demo for dragging and dropping objects so you get an idea of the relations between UI and XAML. And yeah, this time it works. So fingers crossed, knock on wood, every possible blessing that I could have, please keep an eye on it, because I'll be nervous for the next hour. So this is our Visual Studio. This is our design surface, very much like Xcode, where you can go in there and drag and drop objects. We can do the same thing. So for example, here, let's say I was just going to drag a button. I can just drag and drop from here, and then I can resize it. I can, change foreground. I can change, anything in here, change the text size, change foreground. Everything that you would expect out of a designer, you'll be able to do here. So here, let's make that a red button. And then let's, for example, go down farther and change the text to be a different size. So I can just go back here and make the font a lot bigger. So I'm just giving you this because I drag and drop. Now, let me show you how we usually work. You'll drag and drop if you want to use a designer. And then we have different modes here. So for example, right now, I'm kind of using what we call the split view. And it's actually showing me the XAML on top and, oh, I'm sorry, the designer on top and the XAML at the bottom right here. And you see kind of what it generated, right? So it added a button and it added horizontal alignments and margins. Some of these things I can later on decide to edit by hand. Something that we do a lot in the XAML world is we edit things by hand. So these are all the elements that it added, through the designer. If I, for example, want to change this margin, we tend to come here and say, oh, that was supposed to be 300, or this was supposed to be 50. We tend to come in and edit it by hand. We get really great IntelliSense. So our XAML is just one file. It's not like a storyboard where you have a lot of them. So with regards to source control, it's XML, so we have really great tools for differentiating diffing the two files whenever you're checking something in, et cetera. We do good about merging. So developers tend to come in and edit these a lot. So if I, for example, wanted to add a checkbox, I'll just come back here and start typing, and you'll see good IntelliSense checkbox. We're looking for the content property, and I just type, something like test, and I can continue in there. So for example, checked or is checked. Checked is the event handler. If I just type checked equals something, it's going to automatically say, hey, you want to create a new event handler? I just click there and let it generate it for me, which will generate the code behind and everything for me. So this is very common for us to go in there and edit XAML by hand. So for example, right here, if I go to the code behind page, which you're going to see more as we go, this will give you, you'll see right there, the event handler. This is the event that will fire whenever that checkbox is checked. We're not going to use that, so I can go back and delete it. But I'm just giving you an intro because I felt like earlier we had a problem where this demo was going to happen in the earlier session. So that's what XAML is the serialization of those objects. Let me tell you what are the things that you serialize so we can kind of get a full view into what we're doing. Obviously, we're dealing with UIs, so everything that we will have are controls, very similar, same term that you use in iOS. We have controls, and they're reusable units for presentations. And to me, controls are kind of a combination of a UI, kind of a look and feel, and then the behavior, right? For example, a button is there to be clicked, a checkbox is there to be checked, sliders have values that you drag and drop. And I think these are a lot of value with regards to familiarity with the OS.
Right.
We have a lot of controls that have very specific. At the end of this session, I'll talk about the Windows controls, kind of the personality, as I call it. And you'll see that certain controls have gestures that users will get to expect. For example, our list view with selection and with the dragging and the panning and all these things. And you want to leverage the controls just so that you get all of that functionality for free. We have a content model. I'm going to explain real quick the content model before I give you the controls so that you can kind of think about it as we go. And when we think about XAML, we think about two types of control. One of them is called a content control. And this is a control that can have one piece of content inside of it. Now, our controls are very flexible. For example, a button can have text or image or, you know, anything inside of it. Literally, you'll see later as we go through demos, I'll be able to go in and to the button and add anything I want to. Mm-hmm. And that's a content control. The only restriction it has, it can have one item, one content item. But you're going to hear me talk about grids and panels. And what you do there is you insert a grid, and then that grid inside of it, the one little item that you insert inside of it can have 10 more items. So there's no restriction here, but you do have to think about the difference between a content control and an items control. An items control is what we use when we have a list, and we have lots and lots of lists. You know, rather than having like UI table view and collection view,
right.
We have a lot more options like, you know, tree views, toolbars, grid views, etc.
We'll see them later, but grid view is very much like UI collection view on iOS. Table view is like the list view on iOS. And you'll see how that becomes obvious very soon.
Yep. And those are our workhorses. Grid view and list view are the workhorses of collections. So if you become familiar with those and the rest of the controls, you'll be fine. I have screenshots here of all the other controls, just so that you can look for the ones that you're familiar with or the ones that you're looking for. Buttons, hyperlinks, toggles, sliders, different names from what you get in iOS, but all of these maps directly to iOS. Activity indicators and progress rings, we just have different names. But functionally, they're pretty much the same. You'll be able to go back and forth very seamlessly. We have text boxes, password box is the one that has the little special characters so we don't show the text. We have multi-line text boxes. We also have rich text boxes that display RTF. Images, pop-ups, which is kind of a property sheet. We will have those list boxes, combo boxes, web views, daytime pickers. Everything that you would expect is there. So there's no surprises there. I'm not going to walk you through every single control. I think most people understand those. What I'm going to show you is a little bit of the features that we have within some of the basic controls. So let's go back here to that little demo we added. And I'm going to go back. And I added one button. So let's do a couple things first. First of all, I'm going to change the layout here from this grid to a stack panel. And you'll see here, for example, right there, I changed that grid to be a stack panel so I can stack items one next to the other. And you'll see here that it automatically changed the bottom. The closing element for that button changed underneath so that I would have, for the stack panel changed underneath. This used to be a grid, so here, you'll see here if I change this, the bottom is changing too. So we are very optimized for editing things by hand.
Right. And that's just IntelliSense helping you out.
Yeah, and that's just IntelliSense helping you out. So I'm going to go ahead. Let's actually leave that alone, and let's add one stack panel so I can show you a few features. And in fact, let's just remove the button. And I just want to show you a few features with regards to styling. And what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to add two buttons. And just leave them pretty empty. They're in the stack panel right now. If I zoom here, you should start seeing them. You'll see right there that it's a very simple button. They're not sized. We can barely read them. There's just three buttons right there. And what I'm doing this is I'm going to introduce you to the concept of styles. Again, I mentioned that we have these styles that are like these cascading style sheets. So I'm just going to go right here to my page, which is kind of my controller for this page, the container. And I'm just going to edit the resource collection. So the resources is a kind of a property bag where we will put things that we're going to reuse across the page, things that we want to share. And here I can define a style.
And that resources dictionary lives on each control.
Yep. Yeah. Page, every UI element can have its own resource collection. Normally, because we want to share them, we will put them at the page level and at the app level. So app, you can have share resources. And that's actually how we get theming. If you look at Windows, we will have two themes in Windows, a dark theme and light theme. And then you can just swap and forth back and forth by switching the theme. You just said, preferred theme equals light, and you'll go back and forth. And you don't have to tweak your code to
do that. And that theme just changes the default styles that your app runs with.
Exactly. So here I define a style. And now this is implicit style. So this will be, because I didn't give it a key, this will affect anybody that's a button in the concept of this page.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just defining a style. And then here, styles are nothing but setters and getters. So I can say setter property equals background.
And that's IntelliSense knowing the properties that are available because you've set the target type to
for
button.
For button, yes. And then value. equals red. And what that's going to do is immediately, it's going to turn all those buttons into red. So you can see here, this is a reusable style. Now I can give it a name and use it only on specific buttons, or I can go back and leave it like here by type, you know, just make it something that applies to all the buttons. So here I'm just going to say width value equals 200 to make them a little bit bigger. Right, and you see that it's changing. So this is the concept of styles, and this can trickle down, mm-hmm. right? They can also be inherited. So for example, right here I have, you know, style target type equals button. If I wanted to do something special here, I can just say X key equals red button. And you see that when I gave it a name, it no longer applies to all the buttons. So now I would have to go somewhere underneath here and actually give it, you know, reference that style by name. And the reason I gave it a name is so that I can go here and then I just say style target type equals button. And here I'm just going to say based on equals static resource red button.
And that static resource right. keyword is part of the XAML extensions to XML that let you basically access things that are within your within scope from a resource dictionary.
Yep, definitely. So our XAML is mostly XML, and then we have these extensions, for example, extensions for resource lookups, extensions for data binding. So what you see here is I declare another new style. This one's target type button, and it's based on that red one. And you see that now my buttons, again, are working. Mm-hmm. And here I can extend it. So, for example, I can just say, again, add another setter and say property equals foreground values equals yellow. And all I'm doing here is customizing the look and feel. You see that that text changed. So that's the concept of style. Now, again, this is reusable at the page level. If I move this all the way to the app level, now I have not just modified the buttons look and feel for my whole app. Mm-hmm. So the concept of style is that it will drive reuse. And that's a very interesting concept that you will have to, or that you can become familiar with and leverage it a lot. Again, I equate this to UI appearance, but in this case, we're doing it declaratively.
And also, on each button, you could override the style that had been applied to it by setting properties manually on that
yep.
button, correct?
Yeah. So, and I'm going to show you one more thing real quick, so because these will be coming up later, and I'll show you. So I'm going to actually show you the designer tool. So I'm just going to, right here, something that we haven't shown is Blend so far. So I'm in Visual Studio right here. I got this App 17. I'm going to click on it and say open in Blend. Blend, go ahead and save everything. Blend is kind of it's another designer that we have for user interface. This is very much optimized for designers, like the designer role, not developers, people that use Photoshop, Illustrator. You can see here from the look and feel, the design, you know, it looks very much like something, you know, you have a palette here like you'd look that you have in Photoshop. You have properties and stuff like that. You'll see as we tweak them, this is very similar to what we would see from any designer tool.
And the real difference between the things you can edit in Blend versus Visual Studio is that you get to do animations and keyframe animations.
Yep.
Out of Blend.
Yep.
And we'll probably see that later.
Well, we'll see. We might not have enough time to see it. But what I have here is, so I have the exact same three buttons. I'm just showing you that I can open everything in Blend. Here I have my properties. I can go back and customize. For example, if I wanted to customize a button here, maybe this one, I just want to override the local value for the background. I can do that. I can just click on background here and then go back here and just, you know, say, oh, let's make a gradient background for this button. I'm not a designer, so I'm going to create really ugly stuff here where I'm just creating this yellow, you know, migrating towards this darker button. And now I have the foreground button is, you know, yellow and you can't read it. So we'll go back and swap that and make it red. So here I'm just customizing the look and feel for this button as we go.
Yep.
Now, the reason I came into Blend is because I wanted to show you a different concept that we have inside, you know, in XAML that's going to make it really easy to customize. Styles are very powerful, but styles can only customize the look and feel of something that already exists. So it's only setting properties that exist on the
button.
That
are exposed on that object already.
Yep, exactly. So here what I can do is I'm just going to click on this button and I'm going to say edit the template, and I'm just going to say edit the copy of this template. And what it's going to do is in XAML we have this concept of lookless control. So we say, look, a button has a behavior and its behavior is click. And a button also has, this look and feel. And for Windows, the look and feel is very simple. It's kind of like a rectangle, like literally that's what it is, a rectangle with a content presenter inside of it. So here, if I click here, OK, you'll see that I have kind of a template that I can go back and look at.
And the idea behind this is, of course, to completely divorce the look and feel of a button with what it actually does. Yep. So literally anything could be a button.
Yep, so let me go back here real quick, make sure. So I was in here, and I just say edit template. I was just making space. That's fine, I just create a new template here. And you'll see here I have my control template.
I think it's up at the top left there.
It's a what?
If you gotta scroll to the left a little bit in that window.
No,
maybe.
There's no screen. I'm trying to resize the window a little bit. So, let's go look at it from Sala.
In that pane at the bottom there, the scroll bar.
Yeah, but there's no. Oh, you're saying go. All right.
There's your control template. It's that little square there.
Yeah, but this is not. I was expecting to see rectangles and everything else. Let me show it to you in SAML to make sure we're on the right page, because this is looking wrong. So see how it's just set in the template there?
That looks
so
right.
Let's go back here. No, it should be a full. It should have the whole thing here. So let me go back here and make sure that I didn't open here. So I'll go back real quick. So I have my button here, I have my grid here. Let's just do it like this. We'll drag a button. The window is a little bit off, but I still be able to see this. So let me go back here and I'll just drag a button. And it's inherited, so let me reset the style here. Because it's overriding, let's see. Yeah, so this is because I already overwrote it. So let me reverse engineer here. Let's do it like this. New item, blank page. Because somehow I think the style that we created by hand must be giving us a conflict there. Let me just click here, right click, edit template, edit the copy. This is what I wanted.
Okay.
What I wanted to show you, this is the template, because that one, because I started typing the style by hand, it must be conflicting with what I did there. But what I have here is I have the button, and you can see the look and feel of a button. The button is a grid with a border inside of it and a content presenter inside of it, and then it's got two visual states for focus.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for example, here, that's the default look and feel for a button. I can go in there and change it. I can go back and say, look, let's remove the content presenter, and let's make this button something like a route button, so a round button, so I can remove that grid there, and I can come back here and add, for example, an ellipse, right? So now I'm adding an ellipse onto that grid, and then I'm just going to go back and add that content presenter again, and I go back and make this ellipse something that, right now there's ellipse on the margin, it's got a fixed height. So I'm just going to go back and say, set it to auto, right, so that it stretches. And then I come back here and I say horizontal alignment. And now I have a button there that would have a round button look and feel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right, so here I just redefine. This is the concept of a template, and I just redefine what a button looks like. That's the whole point of having a control template. Now, obviously, here, you have, in this case, we have, white ellipse that we added. So I can go back to the top right here because we added a fill, and I can just say, use the default template binding color that you have because we added something that was white and it's conflicting. So I'm just going to bind the background of this ellipse that we added onto the background of the control. So when I add it, it becomes black again. And now again, I have a round button. And mm-hmm. that's the concept of a control template. right? So those are two concepts. Again, each one of these takes me an hour to explain most of the time. Yeah.
You just touched on quite a few long concepts there.
Yep.
Binding control templates.
Yeah. Yep. So so that's kind of just giving you an idea of the things that you're able to do. Go watch the SAML session because I got to move and show you a couple more concepts. Go watch the SAML session and then you will see a lot of these applied. Again, full 1 hour explaining you exactly what we did. But in case you're wondering, so for example, right here, we have this one button. Now it's a real button right here. I can, for example, go into the button and change their foreground to be red. And you see that the ellipse, because we connected the background of the ellipse to the background of the button, is now red. So it's all working there. I can also do something where you saw me earlier, how we had a style and we were reusing that style. So I can come back here and I'll just add a new button, right? And you'll see right here when I say apply style, you know, apply resource, I can apply the style, and then it makes it a round button again. Now, this one's not red because all we did was change the red here, the background locally on this one instead of the style or the template. I can go back to the template and mix and match styles and templates.
If you had made a style
to create
at the page
a branded
level.
Button. Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's the concept. Let me go back so I can show you a few more of the things that you have to learn. But that is the concept of styles and control templates. And now we go back here. And I want to introduce you to one more concept, which is the concept of panels and layout. In SAML, one of the things that we do with regards to Windows UI is we have a myriad of devices. Here we have a Surface Pro that's 1920 by 1080.
These giant things.
Bigger, you know, monitors that we have higher resolution. I have my laptop. So on Windows, you will see that you have to write UI that resizes a lot.
Right.
And for that, we have the concept of panel. And a panel is just a very simple class whose job is to lay out its children. Layout means position, right? So, for example, you know, we'll have a panel that has a table-like layout. We call it a grid, and that's just going to have table-like functionality. So let me show you a couple of the panels that we have. There's a lot of panels on the platform, and a lot of them are extensible. I'm only going to touch on Canvas, Stack Panel, and Grid, because those are the ones that are across all SAML platforms. And those are kind of the workhorses. After that, the other items are more specialized, and they tend to be used for example, inside a grid view or something else. You won't interact with them as much directly. You'll just take advantage of them through using some other control. Canvas is very simple. This is very much like iOS layout, where things are absolutely positioned. So I can just say, oh, top left 0 and get something there. I can say top right 0 and move the button over here. So Canvas is just absolutely positioning its children. You tell it where, and there won't be anything affecting that. No matter the size available, no matter anything else, Canvas will just, you know, it's absolute position.
And there's also implicit Z ordering, too, in that the order that they appear in the layout is the order that they're rendered. So if you put two things in the same place, the first one's going to be drawn under the next one in SAML.
So we do have the concept of C index. So if you want an item to be in front of another, you can set it to be a higher C index. But by default, you're right, like, if you have three items in a canvas, the one declared at the bottom of that SAML, or the one declared last, is the one that's going to be in the front.
Right. Yeah. And yeah. You can always override that with an explicit Z index.
Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we also have the concept of stack panel, and stack panel just stacks your children in one direction. It can be vertical or horizontal, and it's just stacking them in that direction. It has a well-defined behavior that it does, and then the workhorse here is the grid. This is the one that has more flexibility. You can see here it's a table-like layout where I can define the rows and the columns. And here, when I define rows and columns, I can use anything I want. I can say these rows are fixed size, like they're going to be 100 pixels or, you know, X hundred units up. Or I can go in there and say, oh, this is a percentage. I can say, oh, look, we use the star very much like the table layout in HTML, where we can say, look, there's so much space available, I want to take 30%, 70%, 80%. And this is space available after anything that's fixed height.
Right.
And then the last thing that we have is we can have rows that are just auto-sized. So you can insert things and just say, oh, my row height or my column width is just auto-sized. So size me to whatever my content is, and that's how much I'm going to take.
And you can use all three of those types in combination as well.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you can have elements that expand multiple rows and multiple columns. So you see here a little bit of that. Let me show you the layout. I have a little really ugly, but I thought it would be useful for the code sample. And by the way, what's happening here is saying, hey, project for App 17 has been modified externally. That's because we went into Blend and we edited the project in Blend. In fact, let's go back to Blend. I can show you this layout better in Blend. Actually, App 17 was a brand new app anyway. So I have a different app here. This is binding samples. I need to open the layout samples. And I'm opening it from Blend. So I'm going to open project. And all of these demos you will be able to get with the download for the course. So you'll see right here, I have just one little main page. And it has all the layouts inside of it. Layout resizing. Yep, let me zoom out. I did the wrong thing. I opened it in Visual Studio. So let's go back into Blend. Actually, let's just leave it in Visual Studio. So here what I've done is I have this little flippy control, and inside of it I put all the layouts. And you'll see the SAML. I put layouts with different element sizes, so I can show you a few of the concepts here. So let's run this demo, and I'll show you what we have. So this is a grid, and it has a couple of rows. For example, right here, the first row is 100 pixels height. It's fixed. Same thing for the width here. It's also fixed for this column. And then you'll see here I have different sizes of rows and columns. And this rectangle, for example, is taking, this blue rectangle is a 5 star, 5 of whatever is left over. Same thing for the bottom. So we have different sizes columns here. And the one thing that I wanted to show you is this. As the width resizes, you see things resize.
Right.
So that's the advantage of grid, is that it's resizing its children, it's reorganizing. You could go much fancier and say, oh, I'm going to change the layout where I no longer use a grid. I can use a stack panel or something else. But by default, just getting nice resize behavior, it's good enough.
Right. And that resize behavior, it's really mostly useful for when you want to target multiple different types of devices or screen resolutions.
Yep, exactly.
You can make something that looks good on your device, and if you set up your grid right, it will scale perfectly for other devices.
Or percentages as orientation changes. Mm-hmm. If you want to keep a percentage or something like that, this can do all of that. And what you see here is I have these sliders which are data bound onto these objects, and they're just tweaking the layout for that demo. And you see that the items resize. You see, for example, row 0 is never ever resized. No matter how small I make this, that will never be shrinked.
And because that's the one you assigned.
Else is, yep, that's
fixed
the
size.
Only one that's fixed size. Yep, so that's kind of a basic one. Here I have canvas, and you'll see here with canvas, as I resize it, you see that it starts clipping, right? Because the lowest I can go is 400, and you can see at that point it's no longer visible. This yellow rectangle is no longer visible. So canvas is kind of the basic one. Again, it's canvas left, top, right.
And that's very, very simple. That yellow rectangle, you assigned something more than 400 to its top.
Exactly. And then here I have a stack panel, and he has three types of controls, a button, a slider. This is a functional slider and a rectangle. And here you'll see it kind of does something similar to canvas, where as you shrink enough, it might start clipping, right? But that's just kind of the behavior that it has. Now, I did it this way because I wanted to show you a couple more properties. So we also have the properties on margin and padding. So for example, right here, I have this rectangle, this blue rectangle, because this affects layout too. And the rectangle has padding. Padding is the space between that element and the children inside of that element, right? So if I want to have 10 pixels border across all my UI, I can just come back here. So for example, right now, these boxes are data bound to this padding text box. So if I just say 10 right there, everything got padded by 10. If I say 100, everything's getting padded by 100, all corners. Now, I don't have to go that way. I can, for example, say 10 on the left and 50 on the top and, 100 on the right and 20 on the bottom. And you see that these are changing the padding. It's always left, top, right, bottom, right? So you see that the padding, and it's the space between that and its children. So that's something that you're going to want to leverage as you go. And I'm using it here inside the canvas in a border, but you can use it across the board. Padding, most UI elements, all the controls will have a padding property that you'll be able to set there. The next property that you can also use for layout is margins. So you see right here, I have a stack panel, and they're all next to each other because they're kind of stacked horizontally. So I can come back here and say, oh, I want margin. Margin is the space between an element and the element next to it, right? So for example, here, same thing. I can just say the margin is 50, and you see now I have 50 Actually, I have 50 right here on the left and 100 in between these two, because now they're both, they both have a margin. So this is kind of the concept of layout. There's a lot of, you know, dynamic behaviors that we can do. Margins, padding. We also have alignment where we can say, oh, I'm going to be aligned to the top left, or I'm being going to be aligned so I can stretch. Mm-hmm. And you see that in the grid. All my elements were aligned and stretched so that they stretch the size of it. So with that, you can combine and mix and match as much as you want and create some really, really dynamic layouts. And the interesting thing now, if you look at this SAML, the interesting thing out of that demo, besides the layout and the ugly UI, is this. Here's the main page, and I have the main page, and I have everything there, right? And then let me show you the code behind for that. And there's no code at all. Right, so what I did there was all those controls were data bound, and you could see how I was binding text boxes, which had properties of type thickness, etc., onto the controls, and everything was data bound. Mm-hmm. And that's a concept that we also have in .NET and SAML, which is we use data binding a lot. Right. Data binding is connecting two elements together so they can be bound. Now here I was showing you data binding from one control to another. You can also data bind from one control to your business objects.
And that's probably the most common use case for data binding.
Yeah, that's definitely the most common use case.
And we could spend half a day on that easily. But for that half a day spent on binding, I would say watch the Day of XAML that will be posted soon.
Exactly. Let me show you one of the demos that we used on that Day of XAML so you can see, again, the downloads that you have. It's already right here. Already right here. And I'm just going to show you one concept that's really interesting, and I'm not going to dive into it too much, but I do want to show you because coming from iOS, this is a very relevant thing. So I have a sample right here. It's called Collection Samples, and it's got a collection of people. So there's got persons with images and everything else. And what I want to show you here is that I didn't set up the data source, but I want to show you something. Earlier, I showed you a control template, and I told you, oh, with a control template, you kind of define the look and feel for a control. Right. And what we have here when we have items controls is we have the concept of data templates. And a data template right here is, I have a list view, and I have a data template that I'm defining here. And very much like a UI table view, in UI table view, by default, you get one of those four templates that has title, subtitle, et cetera.
That's right.
So we have the same concept, but we don't ship with a data template out of the box. We tell you, hey, you write your own data template. But with our data templates, you can do anything you want. So for example, right here, I have a data template that has a grid inside of it. It has two columns. It has an image and text box. And it's kind of aligning these persons that we see. So if I just show you this sample real quick, I just say run this project. I'm going to run it from within Blend. So you can see here, run it. I click on the collection sample. And you see here, there's a collection of people. This is from last week's demo, so we only have two pictures. And you can see here, for example, I can add persons and the collection's growing. So you can implement collection, change notification, and everything else. And it's all data bound. There's no code fitting that other than the definition of the persons and the collection for persons that we see.
And so just to kind of recap that, if we have a items collection, in this case that was a list view, and that is bound to some source of data, in this case it was person objects, the data template is how we tell the list view how to render each particular item in that items collection. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and you can have many data templates. So you can have a template selector. If you have a list view and it's kind of got heterogeneous data, you can have different data templates and do a template selector. If you like to data bind, if you want to do list view and get callbacks the way you do on table view, you can do that too. Mm-hmm. I was just showing you the concept of being able to, at design time, create all these objects because a designer can come back here and do a really great job at actually designing. So for example, right now, I didn't have data context, but if I just, and I haven't tested this code since last week, but if I just bring that code in there, and build, oops.
Nope.
And yeah, so I no longer have these objects because I copied and pasted it from the other one. Actually, just comment these out. So I'm trying to bring you something that has assigned time data so you see what a designer would see with regards to being able to edit and customize the template here. Very much like the experience that we got when we did a template, when we did a control template. I can come back here and give them a design time experience that's actually useful. So I'm just going to comment these
This is also one of the other beauties of
Blend. So you can see here, yeah. So what I did here is I'm still at design time. I'm inside Blend, right? And what I did here is I just enable a design time data source. So I'm inside the tool, and you can come back here and right-click on the list view and edit that template and really tweak it to where the foreground, the fore, you know, everything is perfect. So a designer can come here and do the work, you know, and get a really great, perfect-looking item with just design time data. So that's the concept of data templates. And I got to move on to the next one so that we can try to get done close to on time.
Good luck.
So we'll push it. I think we'll be close. So that's at the highest level, most of the SAML stuff. The way I would, you know, top tips before I move on to patterns and stuff like that, I would say number one is feel free that SAML is okay to use. You're not, if you're afraid of SAML, you're going to be generating a whole lot of work for yourself. SAML is okay to type by hand. So the designer, like in the morning, we had problems with our designer. You know, we will have that often. Sometimes you'll be much more proficient at typing things by hand. It's okay to type by hand. We optimize our designer a lot so that people can use that. So we go in there and trim the SAML. We have really great parsers, et cetera. So you'll be okay. You should definitely understand layouts. Those three that I show you are the key ones. And then from there, when you get into items controls, you'll get into more layouts and you'll see. But those you'll leverage. You don't have to touch. Panels are, by the way, extensible. So if you want to create your own panel, it's very, very straightforward. Again, look at the SAML training. And then I'll say consider data binding. And then I have embedded Windows personality, which I'll show you the Windows controls a little bit later. So that's it. That's kind of the basic, introduction to SAML. Now, the next thing that people always ask is, okay, well, I'm used to MVC. What do I get out of SAML, and how do I kind of create my MVCs? And my theory here, or the way I talk about it here, is pretty simple. I have an MVC here, and I have the usual mechanisms that we use to connect: outlet, target action, and delegation, and data sources. That's kind of how we connect in Nextcode. And we have something that matches every single one of them. So an outlet is an X name. You've seen me doing it two or three times already. Whenever I X name something in SAML, that automatically creates the outlet. For target action and delegation, we already talked about it throughout the training. We use events. It's very similar. You're just, you know, listening to the events and doing that. And then for data sources, I would recommend data binding. If not, you can have data sources the old way and just get callbacks for everything you do. So let's create something real quick, just so you know we can recap a little bit the structure. And I'm just going to go here real quick and say,
you should show that the generated intermediate code if you can, of the partial class.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go here, new project, very simple, blank application, app 18. Interesting. Did I just choose a phone one? What I thought. No, Windows Store.
You're good.
Cool. Yeah. I was just telling people I can choose phone from here. I thought I was doing phone. So here, you know, you saw me do this earlier. I actually dragged the button, but I closed the solution. So I'm going to do right here the most simple random number generator. I've been to enough beginner ranch trainings now that I've seen how people actually learn from random number generators, so I'm going to steal it. I have a button right here, and I have a text block. And I'm not going to customize the look and feel much other than I'm going to make these readable.
Bump the font size.
So on the text block, I'm just going to go here and bump the size for the text. Right. So this is a very simple random number generator. That's what's going to be. And I have right here a button. So you've seen me do this earlier. Actually, let's go ahead and do it here where I'm just going to create the outlet, xname equals button, which I don't really need. I'm just showing it to you. And then, for example, right here, when I'm in the button, I can come back here to the property editor. I see the list of events, and I just type onClick so I can wire something up, right? And you'll see here the onClick automatically gets added for me, right? And I got to go back and do the random item. I got to give an outlet to these text box right here. So X name equals, what's going on here, canvas? I'm just going to call it random output, right? So this is the output that we'll have. And I change the alignment here because I drag and drop something, but I'll leave it like that. So this is just creating the outlets. That's all it's doing. And I can go back here and look at the code behind so far. There's nothing other than the event handler. So here I can just say random r equals new random. And actually, I should probably do it outside so we can kind of reuse the same seed. And I'll add a seed. And then I'm right here. I'm just going to say random output dot text equals r dot next.
In random outputs in scope because he added it into the XAML. So.
Yep. So it's in scope because we added it to the XAML and we have the outlet.
Right. And the XAML is what's actually at runtime going to form the other half of the partial, or other third actually, of the partial class.
Exactly. So what you'll see here is this. So here's the relation. So first of all, you see random output here. If I right click on it and I say go to definition, it's going to take me back into the XAML. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is the connection that we do have. So you'll be able to go back and forth very, very easily. Now, the other connection that you'll see is I have right here page, x class equals app19.mainpage. So this is kind of like, you know, creating a partial, the tool will generate partial classes behind the scenes. I'll show you the output in a minute. And it's actually going to connect it to this main page that we've been using. So you can go back here to the code behind and see that here's kind of the equivalent of my controller, and I have a main page partial class. So we have a view and a code behind. I think of the view, the XAML, as the SIB. I think this is the controller, and you know they're kind of tied. They're a little bit more tightly coupled than when we get out of Xcode, but I'll show you in a minute how to fix that.
That class name that's listed there, that's kind of like the default implementation when you create a new instance of a view controller that's also tied to a ZIB. It will just use the name of that view controller minus the view controller, look for that ZIB, and then instantiate it. Those two things are doing the same exact thing, the class definition in the XAML and the view controller searching for something it's with its own name.
So. Yep. Now, if you go back here, if you go back here, you'll see this partial class main page has this method called initialize component. Now, this I didn't add. This was added by the tool. Mm-hmm. So I can right click here and say, hey, go to definition of that. And here's where you're going to see the code that's generated by the tool. So here's the code. So you can come back here and see the code that the tool generated. Here's how it created my outlets. So it has right here the declaration of a button. And then it's going in there serializing and creating everything. And then it's going in there and saying, find by name that button, and this is how it's connecting the outlets.
Right.
So it's all coming together there. You have a model view controller-like architecture. Again, this one is a little bit tightly coupled because the view and the controller are tied.
Mm-hmm.
It's one class. Now, you can play around with this. You can create your own main page class and subclass and tie them together that way. There's a lot of ways that you can get around it. This is what comes out of the box. And it's very similar. For most people, if you're only creating one, a view controller with one view, these will work out of the box.
In that code, while it's generated and searching by name, if you've ever seen Android or programmed for Android before, that finding by name and then assigning to a reference should look extremely familiar. But this is just done automatically.
Yep. Now, if you read anything about Microsoft and UI and XAML, you're going to hear about this other pattern that we use, which is model view view model. And this one is nothing but a model view controller, but all we're doing here is what we had earlier, the X name stays, and instead, before we were using events, and here we have the concept of command, which is a little bit of a more loosely coupled target action pair, right? And then we use data binding for connecting everything. So we're not going to use outlets in this model. We're just going to use a slightly different command. No events. We're not going to use events. We're going to use commands, and we're going to use data binding instead of setting the code by hand.
Right.
And you'll see in a minute that the code looks exactly the same. So I can come back here. Oops. My escape is not. There we go. And I'll just add a new project real quick. And I'll just say add new project. And I'll make it a blank app.xaml. Again, hey, we recycle. We went to app 1. It's like maybe it's only got 10 or 20 to do because we went to 19 and now we're back to 1.
Oh.
And what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to copy and paste the XAML. So you see that I'm not cheating with any of that stuff. And I'll copy and paste what we created here, and then we'll do a little bit of taking stuff out. So we have a grid right here, and I'm just going to paste it here. And I got to remove all the outlets. So here's the X names. These are outlets. So we remove these, remove the outlet here. And then we're going to replace those with bindings in a minute. And I got to remove the click event handler. The button had a click event handler, so let's go here. And remove it because we're no longer going to need it. So we'll do that. And let me make these my active project. And then I'm going to, in the interest of time, I'm going to break two classes, but I'll walk you through and through them. So add existing item. I'm going to bring two classes. One of them would be there by default if we were using any template other than the empty template. So we have CSAML. Where did I put those samples? Oh, sorry. This is from a different demo. So I have these two classes right here, random number view model, which is what's going to replace our controller, and relay command. If you had opened any kind of project other than the empty one, you will have a relay command out of the box. Visual Studio would have generated it. Relay command is a generic implementation of command. ICommand, if you look at the interface here, is just a very simple interface that has only three methods, or two methods, can execute and execute. This is what we're going to use to connect a button to an action. And can execute is something where the button calls onto this interface and says, oh, can I execute? And if we tell it no, the button will disable itself.
Right.
Right? And execute is when the button, when somebody clicks on the button, they says, oh, execute the action. That's the loosely coupled action pair that we have. And relay command is nothing but a generic implementation of this that takes the callbacks, and we're going to use that. And then I created here a random number view model. And it's got two properties. One of them is number, and the other one is called click command. Number is the generated number. Click command is the command that's going to fire whenever something gets clicked. And you'll see here, you know, click command, it's got a callback for the onclick. Here's where we're going to generate our number, our random number. And the last thing that you see is that this business of this view model is implementing iNotify property change. That's what's making it observable for the UI. So this is the interface that you implement to notify the UI that properties are changing on your object. It's a very straightforward interface. You just got this one member called property change, which is an event, and then you have to implement it where whenever the number is getting set, I'll just fire the property change for that number, and that's all we're doing.
Right, and this view model is in no way other than your own intention connected to the view or the page
exactly.
In any way.
Yep.
Right.
So I can go back here to the page, which we knew was empty. Right now it knows nothing. And I'm just going to say, earlier we had click. So here I'm just going to say command equals binding. And it's called click command. Right? And then here I'm going to go to the text box, and I'm looking for the text property. And I'm just going to say text equals binding.
And again, this binding is another one of those extensions that makes XAML different from XML in that we're using these curly braces and it's going to execute some sort of expression.
Yep, exactly. So these are one of the extensions. And then the last thing I have to do, so now I have a view and I have a view model, but I haven't connected them.
Right.
And there's all kinds of ways to connect them. Here I'm going to take the shortcut and I'm just going to go to where the page is created, and I'm going to set the data context for this page. Data context is a special magic thing that we use where we say the data context for this page will be this, and anybody underneath has access to this data.
Right.
So I'm just going to say these new data
context. And this data context property is available on all UI elements as well.
Yep, exactly. And it's inherited. So if I put a page, everybody underneath it inherits, or everybody, every element anywhere on the tree can actually have
unless
their own
unless they
data
override
context.
It with their own data context.
Yep, exactly.
Very similar to the styles.
Yep. So here I have these are data context, a sample random view model. So this is what's connecting everything together. And now I can come back here and just say debug. This should launch app one.
And so that binding expression that you made for the command of the button where it was bound to button click is now searching the data context, that object you just created, and is assigning that command to the button.
Yep. And now when I click on it,
there's a random
it's generated a random number. Now, this is completely loosely coupled. If you look at this, you'll see right here, the only relationship between the page and the view model is this. And the reason we use view model, like this view model pattern, besides the fact that the data binding buys us a lot, it prevents us from having to write a lot of glue, the reason we use the view model is because this is very testable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when I write my business objects or my logic, I can go in there and test the view models. I can use the view models to exercise them to test my UI and do screen captures and do kind of UI testing. But for the most part, I usually test the view models really well, and then I trust that Microsoft got data binding right. So I'm not testing as much as UI, because UI automated UI testing is hard.
Right.
So this is kind of the, you know, this is the pattern that we use the most.
But writing unit tests is a piece of cake, especially in Visual Studio. And you can use all of that against the Vue model.
Exactly.
Right. And that's the big motivation.
Yep. That's where we come from these. And then, again, I right now tied the page to the Vue model through this one line of code so they know something about each other. You can use IOC or any other pattern in there and actually decouple them even farther. Mm-hmm. Normally, if I had time and I didn't launch the phone here today, so I'm not going to take the 3 minutes. But when you download this demo, there will be a project there that has a phone project. And normally, I show people, oh, let me show you this exact same this exact same Vue model. In fact, I just link to that code. I don't even copy it or anything. Running on a phone project, and then you'll see the Vue model there.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're going to be at. In fact.
It's that same mentality of divorcing the UI from the behavior the behaviors that it can accomplish.
Yep. And what I did here is I didn't launch the emulator because we had problems just earlier, so I kind of want to keep things low. So I didn't launch the emulator, so I'm not going to show that one. But you'll have the code for that. And that's why we use MBVM. And you see here, the only thing that changed is that we use commands to communicate and we use bindings to communicate. Outside of that, it doesn't deserve a new name, but we use it that way for convenience. Now, you saw me do a lot of the UI, and I want to give you a couple of very iOS-specific terms. In particular, you saw that I gave you the controls, but I never talk about controllers.
Right.
So in our pages, what we do is we do very similar to UI navigation controller. We do navigation across those pages. You've seen me do a little bit of that. So what we have here is we have a frame, we have a window, and the frame. The frame is the container, and he can navigate pages in and out. That's kind of the pattern that we use the most. If you're thinking, well, how am I going to do a tab bar or something, I'll show you controls like app bar, where you get very similar functionality. But they're not part of our navigation functionality. They're not core to the navigation, so you'll see how all those fit. And then, that frame can contain all kinds of pages, and then we can transition in and out. And we give you all the animations to transitions in and out. I didn't show animation in Blend because I know I'm short on time, but that's just where, we have transitions and animation all across XAML. With regards to navigation, I want to kind of build a correlation here between our frame and the navigation controller, because that's what you see. If you look at a frame, you see the same events here, navigated, navigating, navigation fail. You see very similar events, and you see the navigate methods here, where this is very similar to what you use with navigation controller when you're presenting, kind of pushing and popping controllers in and out. Mm-hmm. So that's something we do. We give you transitions the same way, and you can just go back and forth across the controllers. And then we also do the same for page lifecycle. Page right now is kind of being our view controller, and I wanted to highlight some of the events that it has. It has the unnavigated to and unnavigated from, and then it also has a loaded event. And if you think about a view controller, right, on view controller, you have a view will appear, mm-hmm. right? Then you have a view did load, and then you have, unload and or will disappear and unload. And this is exactly the same. Like, we map very, very much back to back with regards to what you expect out of page lifecycle. So you will have similar events with regards to going in there and doing page and navigation. Last thing I want to just highlight Windows personality controls, and I'm going to do it through a demo. Because it's actually easier. So I'm here in Search, and I'll show you one of my favorite Windows 8.1 apps, which is Health and Fitness. Not that I'm healthy and fit. I just like the look and feel. And it actually has really great articles like working out on vacation, which, I'll read it, and I probably won't follow it. But this is kind of a...
It's vacation.
Yeah, it's a vacation. I'm like... But it has a few of the controls that I think are interesting. For example, here you see what we call the hub. There's kind of a hero shot right here on the left hand where this is our hero shot, and then there's a lot of content you can scroll through. So that's kind of what a hub is. It's kind of a hero shot with a lot of content, and for the most part, you're panning through that content. Now, we have, for example, a semantic zoom control where I can stop it there, and I can do my touch here. I can do a semantic zoom. So this is all the content that was represented there, and from here, I can jump around so I can go into the medical section of all that content. This is another control where two controls are related semantically. One of them is kind of the grouping of everything that it contains, and you can show the UI so people can navigate very quickly in and out. You see here throughout, you see a lot of our grid views. So you'll see, for example, right here, This is a list view, and again, it's using those data templates we showed you earlier. Here you see a grid view where it's actually just the collection view, mm-hmm. right? So you see a lot of our controllers. If you click on anything here...
And all of this is actually within a grid view, too, the whole big thing that's scrolling.
Yep. Well, yeah. It's all within a grid, and then it's got the Hub control, which is the new control that we have that's a container for all the sections.
Oh, okay.
Right? So Hub is new in 8.1, so it's not on your training
yet. Not there yet. All
right. And then we have on top, we have a navigation bar, which is a really good way. If you're looking for tab bar or navigation, a tab bar or navigation controller, we have a tab bar on top, and then you can also have an app bar at the bottom. That's the one thing this app doesn't have. But these are some of the controls that, for example, right clicking on the page, and the nav bar is coming down. And those animations you can see here, there's an animation that comes out, a transition and everything. Those are all what I call the Windows personality. And this is what you get out of using the native controls that are coming in the box. You're going to get a lot of functionality for free.
Right?
So now to go back to your point, those are some of those are 8.1 controls. So I want to point here a reference to the controls that I just showed you a little bit. Grid view and list view, it's collection view and UI table view. There's really great samples on SDK. These screenshots came from that sample. So you're going to get, you know, rich data binding from these elements. You're going to get UI virtualization very much like you get in Xcode. You're going to get this really smooth scrolling pan and zoom from those controller. I didn't show you an app bar in health and fitness, but app bar is the command bar that will be at the bottom of the page. I show you a nav bar, which is at the top. And this app bar is right here at the bottom of the page. And, you know, it's got all the integration where... you know, for example, when you turn into orientation, the UI shrinks. Maybe it doesn't show the text. It just shows the buttons. It resizes. It does a lot of things out of the box that is, you know, kind of familiar Windows look and feel, things that you expect from every app. I show you semantic zoom, which is just the ability to go between two controls that are related, two views that are related, semantically link them and navigate across them. I didn't show settings flyout. This is the flyout that you've seen as we come out with the charms all the time. It's a flyout that comes from the left. And just kind of, it comes from the right, and it just kind of shows you a little bit of UI.
And it's just a fairly standard way that users will be expecting to see in your app to basically go in and change settings and specify preferences.
And in the settings flyout, you can put any content you want. You see here a whole lot of options, a whole lot of, you know, toggle switches, buttons, etc. You can put any content you want. You saw this control earlier. This is the flip view. It's the one, it's like UI page view, where I can just go back and forth. One page at a time or one screen at a time. You saw this when we did layout. So it's kind of an items control there. And then we have a web authentication broker, which is where we would use to connect to anything that's using kind of internet standard like OAuth, OpenID. And it's a system-wide dialogue that you can use to connect to all the systems so that the user is very familiar. They know, I can trust this code because it's running the system-wide dialogue. And everything else. And then we have flyouts, which is just smaller versions of the settings flyout. So you can kind of pop in and out, do the equivalent of property sheets. The difference between flyouts and pop-ups, which I mentioned earlier, is flyouts right here are actually light dismiss. So if I show this UI and I click anywhere else, that flyout will go away.
Right, it's not modal. It doesn't block the UI.
It's not modal.
UI.
Yep, exactly. And then I do want to, you know, as you were pointing out, some of those controls that I just showed you, like, for example, Hub, which was not listed there, are actually in 8.1. If you want some of these controls in 8.0, like flyout, menus, or settings flyout, those are actually in the Callisto library. This is a library shipped by Tim Heuer. He works for Microsoft. He works in the SAML team. We just knew there were controls, some controls that we couldn't ship on time for 8.0. Mm-hmm. So anybody that's using 8.0 today, you can go download the library. It's open source. It's got all the, you know, it's got the right controls, the right source, and those will, you know, transfer really well towards 8.1 when these controls are now in the box. Mm-hmm. And that's it for SAML. I was close enough to on time, just 3 minutes over. So that's a marathon. That's a marathon. He had no faith in me. he probably was looking for an hour and a half.
That's what I thought it was going to be.
Is there any questions from the...
There's
not a lot?
There's nothing.
Yeah, we have Ben Riga and Matthias Shapiro answering questions. So the fact that we don't have anything to read here probably just means that they've been answering them. So keep asking questions there as we go.
Yeah, popping up and disappearing. So
you know,
they're doing good.
And keep going from there. That's SAML. Again, once this course is live too for on-demand viewing. We will also have a link to the SAML course for on-demand viewing. That was another 8 hours, and we dive in depth into a lot of those concepts.
For what it's worth, that was XAML as short as it ever could possibly be.
Hopefully, at least gave you the sense. SAML is very, very powerful. That is the one thing that I tell everybody who's coming new. Don't fight it. I do see, and you know, when I code, for example, with storyboards, I definitely see the pain of source control and all the stuff when I code Xcode apps. But I think on our side, the pages are individual. We do a pretty good job at diffing. So if you look at our source control and our differentiator tools, it's pretty good about differentiating. And I think in the end, what the benefits that you're going to get are all that styling, the data binding, all the resources, all those concepts is going to outweigh the, you know, the fear that you have of, oh, should I just do everything in code?
Oh, wait, so we got a question from Ben.
Question from Ben. He's asking if he's going to get paid. so let's see. We will have sound session available in a few more days. Stay tuned.
No, last one. That one. Highlighted.
Oh, some questions about when to use third-party frameworks. Oh, perfect. So that's a great point. So there's a question here about when to use third-party frameworks. So here's where we are today on 8.0 and 8.1. So first of all, what I showed you there, most of the controls that I show you, all the core controls that I mentioned, those are actually standard across the board. The reason I call them core controls, and that slide came from stuff that I do when I present Windows and phone and everything else.
Right.
So those are core controls across the box. And those are very easy. Those are great for people to use. Microsoft has a philosophy where we focus on our platform a lot. We kind of say we will build the primitives, and then we let other third-party vendors build more controls. So for example, if you come to us and say, hi, man, I want really great charting, you're going to get them from Telerik. You're going to get them from Telerik or other third-party vendors, Infragistic, Component One. There's a lot of people writing some really great controls. A lot of those are specialized, like, you know, charts and grids. Some more line of business-oriented controls is great to go from a third-party framework. Another thing that's very popular for third-party frameworks for us is the model view model, right? You saw me there. I kind of say, oh, I'm going to cheat and bring you this class that's implementing change notification, and I talk about maybe using an IOC. There's out there several frameworks to actually implement model view model.
And they provide much more robust implementations of a lot of those relay commands, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So they have their implementation of relay command. For example, last week in the SAML training, my co-host was Lorraine Mignon, who writes MVVM Lite, which is probably one that we would recommend. It's kind of a very pragmatic MVVM implementation. It has relay command. It has a ways to message back and forth across view model and a little tiny IOC. They're not using tiny IOC by hand. I think it's using simple IOC.
Okay.
But it's just giving you enough so you can get started. There's others out there like Caliburn, more powerful but a little bit more advanced. So so you just got to figure out where do I land with regards to those. Now, for those controls, Callisto is very safe. It comes out of Microsoft. It's very, you know, it's very safe to use. It's open source anyway. So if you need controls like flyout, settings flyout, things that were not in 8.0, I highly recommend you use Callisto. Something that I tell everybody, which is really cool, and if you go look at the SAML training, for example, when I taught layouts, I showed some library from Winterleg that had custom layouts.
Okay.
Right, and it had a lot of layout controls, and for me, those are really great just from a learning standpoint. Like, if you go in there, I use that to teach people how to write a custom panel. So on that side, it's really great to go look at the open source. For Silverlight, for example, which is very similar, it's the exact same SAML, same controls, Windows Phone has always shipped something called a control toolkit that has a lot of controls, and again, it's a really great way for people to learn. The learning is very important out of that, and they have transitions, and they have all kinds of nice things that if you're writing a Windows Phone app, you will need the Silverlight control toolkits, and it's in CodePlex.
Right.
So there's a lot, I don't fear third party. With Xcode, fearing third party is almost impossible.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tasks that I've never written. Like if I was writing NSURL connections or networking, I would have to use a third party library. So there's a lot of that here. WinRT, there's not a lot of third-party libraries that you're going to need. I think on UI, because that gets custom, there'll definitely be some third parties that you're going
to
need.
And I think to answer the question, when should you use a third-party framework? Basically, if you're going to be doing MVVM, you should spend some time exploring the third-party frameworks. To do your own MVVM by hand with no frameworks at all, you can do it, but it won't be nearly as fun.
Yep, it's right. You know, you're gonna write 500 lines of code that you didn't have to write because you can go find something that was reusable there. And that's it. Again, I'd recommend looking at the code from learning. And I definitely do recommend looking at some of the third-party vendors because they do have controls that are nice, they're optimized, and they're inexpensive with regards to if you pay $100 for a control because you bought a third-party license and you get, you know, free royalty or free distribution, that's much less than, you know, you spending 3 hours writing a control, even if you could write a control in 3 hours.
Right.
Now, that said, with styling, with the combination of styling, control templates, it's hard for me to think of functionality that's in the box, like click behaviors, sliders, anything like that, that where you have to go and do third-party controls. A lot of our stuff is very customizable.
A big one for third-party controls is graphing. That's even the case on like iOS as well, is creating elegant, nice-looking charts. And I think that's actually Telerik's claim, big.
So, yeah, Telerik has some Shinobi controls, for example, right? Mm-hmm. They write controls for iOS now. The guys, they started writing controls for Windows many years ago, and they're taking a lot of that. And now they have them from everywhere. So yeah, that's it. Let's go ahead and go to the next section. So we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we're going to come and do AppModel.
Yep.
Yep.
Sounds good.
All right, back in 10 minutes. Thank you.